10, 6, 10, 10. So, just a quick announcement and reminders, and then we'll start. So, announcement, homework one is due, homework two is on the web. It's on the web in the form of screenshots, of, sorry, Blackboard shots. I hope you will figure out what they mean. And the class photo will be on Wednesday, which is now going to be spelled this way from this point on. Let me remind you, and then you will be asked to immediately forget it. So last time we defined the Kaufman bracket by a certain funny so-called Skein relation. Initially we had it A and B and D, but then we figured that B must be A inverse, so I just remove it completely. And D is negative A squared minus A to the negative 2. That defines almost an invariant of unoriented knots, namely, it's invariant of everything, under everything except Rademeister 1. And then with the change under Rademeister 1 was relatively minor, so we renormalized it by using the Rife, and then by basically multiplying by a counter term that changes in the opposite way using the Rife. And then the result, well, after some change of variable, is what we called the Jones polynomial. And now I ask you to forget about it for about 10 minutes, because we're doing something else. So far, we've been talking about sporadic invariants. This invariant here, that invariant there, and in fact, there are a few more of them. But now I want to start talking about some sort of general theory of invariants. Okay? Not the only general theory of invariants, so a general theory of invariants. Okay? Definition. So let me start, okay? Let V be an invariant of oriented knots. So oriented means, well, there is an orientation along the strand, S1 is oriented, in oriented space. So, well, I write it in oriented R3, it actually doesn't really matter, it could be defined in any manifold. Also, I wrote knots, and I really write it only for convenience, so it could be links just as well, and in fact, many other classes of knotted objects. Okay? Anyway, whenever you have such a, with values in an abelian group A, typically the rational numbers or something like that. Okay? Whenever you have such an invariant, it automatically extends to knots with a double point. So V extends to so-called N singular knots. So an N singular knot is a knot, that has exactly n sort of double points, and a double point is a point where two strands intersect each other in R3. So strictly speaking, this definition is nonsense, because a knot by definition does not have double points. Okay? So really what I mean is, imitate the definition of a knot, changing a little bit, allowing yourself to have double points. Okay? But I will not repeat definitions. Okay? So the claim is that V extends to n singular knots, and I have to explain how. Okay? So the knot you evaluate, you want to evaluate V on, has a single double point, I can just declare that V of that double point, or V evaluated on a knot that has a double point, and as always, when I write a chunk of a knot, I mean that you should extend it to a knot in any way you wish. Anyway, V evaluated on this is defined to be V on the double point resolved to an overcrossing, so this is, or to a positive crossing, so this is the plus resolution of the double point, minus V evaluated on the double point resolved to a negative crossing. So this is the minus resolution. So these are well defined. If you have a double point, you just infinitesimally move one of the strands in a direction normal to both strands, to the tangents of both strands at the double point, and infinitesimally move the other strand in the opposite direction, and then that defines these two double points, these two resolutions, and as knots, they're well defined. Okay?
Is it well defined in a three-manifold?
Yeah.
Because it
it's completely
like
local.
But on the left-hand side, it seems like if you...
No.
Rotate
the... The definition is happening in R3. Sorry, I'm drawing it in the plane, but it's not a planar definition. There's nothing planar about it. I have a double point in R3. It makes sense, as I just stated it, right? You take the normals to the two... you take the tangents to the two strands at the double point. They define, well, two vectors. In R3, or in any oriented manifold, sorry, I've used the orientation here. In any oriented manifold, there will be a canonical normal to these two, and then you move one of the strands in the direction of the normal and the other in the direction of the, in the opposite direction. And now if you're asking about signs, well, which one is the plus and which one is the minus? Well, it's the right-hand rule and it makes sense in any manifold.
But does that mean ordering on the two vectors?
No.
For the right-hand rule?
What?
I mean, just...
At the end, you know what? If you wish, I mean, I could define the two resolutions in sort of a priori terms. But here's an alternative way, okay? There are two resolutions, and first they come without signs. Okay? Then use the right-hand rule to decide which one is the positive and which one is the negative. The right-hand rule makes sense. The right-hand rule also is independent of which one is first and which one is second. Right? The right-hand rule, you know, it's if you hold the top one, the fingers point on the with the bottom one. If you hold the bottom one, the fingers still point with the top one. So the right-hand rule is independent of the ordering of the two. Okay? So this makes sense. Okay. Now, this is sort of like an analog of a derivative. Right? Because, well, it's a difference in two neighboring points. It's a difference of the values of the original thing at two neighboring knots. Well, where by definition neighboring means differ at only one crossing. Okay? Differ by only one crossing change. Okay? And then the idea is to really think of it as if it's a derivative and continue working as if it's a derivative. So, you know, if you want, I could have called it V prime rather than V. Okay? I don't really need to do it because the fact that it's V prime is simply because V is now evaluated on a knot with a double point, if you wish, on a tangent vector to the space of knots. Okay? So, so I didn't really need to write the prime, and later I may drop the prime, but temporarily, I'll keep the prime. Okay? So now you can ask yourself, how do you evaluate V on a knot with two double points? So suppose you have a knot that has two double points. How do you continue this extension? So when, first of all, if you wish, well, I may or may not write double prime here. Okay, it's not important. The fact that it's double prime is visible from the fact that I evaluate it on a knot with two double points. Okay, but anyway, how do I do it? Well, I will differentiate V on a knot with one double point. So I will compute V of take the first double point, resolve it to an overcrossing, take the second one and keep it. In fact, maybe I should call it V prime, and subtract V evaluated on the first double point resolved to a double to an undercrossing, and the second one kept in place. Okay, and then you can ask yourself, well, I mean, the double points were not ordered. When I said an n singular knot, I didn't say that there is first and second. Okay, so I could have given this definition equally well going the other way. So equally well, I could have made it the V evaluated on the first double point fixed and kept, and the second one turned into an overcrossing minus V of double and then under. So why are these two equal? So first of all, the fancy reasoning. The fancy reasoning is because partial derivatives commute. Okay, because if you have it's like differentiating a function in two different directions, and then partial derivatives commute. And in fact, when you think about why do partial derivatives commute? So suppose you have a function f defined on Rn with values in R. Why is it that partial derivatives commute? Well, you know, there is a bit of analysis, but at the end, the combinatorial fact that lies behind it is the fact that if you differentiate, you are evaluating the function at one point with sine minus, at another point with sine plus. When you differentiate this, you end up now going in the direction of a different vector. You end up evaluating the function at with sines plus and minus at a different layer. And this sort of square of sines is the same no matter if you look at it as the bottom square translated up with opposite signs, sorry, the bottom line translated up with opposite signs, or the left line translated right with opposite signs. Okay, so that's why partial derivatives commute. Partial derivatives here commute for exactly the same reason. Okay? Only that here there is no analysis, it's only the combinatorics. Namely, if you now expand this, or if you now expand this, you'll end up getting the same sum of four knots with sines. Okay? So you will get the same sum of plus minus V evaluated on, I don't know, how should I write it? S1 and S2 to indicate that I'm resolving either in the plus way or in the minus way, where S1 and S2 belongs to plus minus the set with plus or with two symbols, plus or minus raised to the power 2, and so in other words both of them are sines, and the sign here really I could have written it as S1 times S2. Okay? So maybe I should just write it because it's sort of a nice phrase to have. Partial derivatives commute. But anyway, clearly now this can be extended. So you can define V up N evaluated on a knot with N double points to be either the derivative of V n minus 1, and it doesn't matter which one you use, which double point you use to differentiate, or the sum over a sequence Si, I goes from 1 to n, belonging to plus minus to the power n, the product of these signs times V evaluated on the first double point resolved to S1 and the nth double point resolved to Sn. Okay? End of extension. So what do you do once you have once you have derivatives, you can define polynomials. So a polynomial is something whose nth derivative, a polynomial of degree n is something whose nth derivative vanishes. N plus first derivative vanishes. So, definition, V is called of type n, or sometimes Vasiliev of type n, named after Viktor Vasiliev, who first wrote this definition, in fact, who second wrote this definition after Husserov. But anyway, V is called type n if V, when evaluated on a knot with n plus 1 double points, or in fact any number more than n, because it is always equal to 0. If it's true for n plus 1, it's going to be true for any number greater than n, greater than that. Okay? Okay. Example. So, in some sense, the purpose of this class is to construct all such invariants and understand them. Okay? So, let's start with some examples. Maybe example number 0 will be take V to be the constant 7. So, for any knot whatsoever, the value of V will be 7. Okay? So, it's not a terribly interesting invariant, hence it's example number 0, but I claim that it is of type 0. Okay? So, why? Because V evaluated on a knot with a single double point is equal to V of this double point resolved to an undercrossing minus V of this double point resolved to an undercrossing, that's 7 minus 7, that's 0. So, just to be clear, here I meant V on ordinary knots is 7. V on knots with a double point will not no longer be 7. It will be 0. Okay? Good. Example number 2. Example number 1. Yes?
Is there a special type if V is 0 on ordinary knots? If V is just 0 on ordinary knots, is there a special
type? Well, I suppose, and it's like asking what degree is the 0 polynomial? I think it's, people call it minus infinity.
Yes.
Okay? But in some sense it's a counterproductive in our sense. I should have said that if V is of type n for some n, we say that it is of finite type, or Vasiliev, okay? And then it's a bit counterproductive to call 0 minus infinity, because then minus infinity would not be finite type, but it's silly. Yes?
What if there is no enough crossing in when we try to evaluate the n, say? We want to evaluate first a derivative and there are no crossings at all. By definition, 0 then, or...?
No. By definition, V prime can only be evaluated on knots with a single double point. Okay? It's V, or the natural extension of V, to knots with a single double point. Okay, and V double prime is only defined on what knots with two double points. Okay? Okay, example number one, take L of a two-component knot, or a two-component link, gamma 1, gamma 2. So I mentioned that the definition makes sense also for knots, okay? So the claim is that this is of type 1. So it's like a linear function on the space of knots. Okay? So, proof. Let's compute L. First of all, let's compute the first derivative of the linking number. So I have to compute L on a link that has a double point. Now there are two possibilities for this double point. Okay? Either this lives in component 1 and this lives in component 2, or, in fact, there are three possibilities. Or both of these live in the same component, so 1 and 1 or 2 and 2. Okay? In the second case, well, remember the formula for the linking number. We have to count crossings with signs, but we only count crossings between the two different components. Here, whether we resolve it to a plus or to a minus, it just doesn't matter, because well, this crossing is not going to get counted. So this is going to be zero. Okay? Here, well, this crossing will count. It will be counted with a plus 1/2 if it's a positive crossing, and a minus 1/2 if it's a negative crossing. So plus 1/2 minus minus 1/2 is 1, and that's the answer. Okay? So now, basically, once we've differentiated once, we got constants, so the second derivative will be 0. But more precisely, if we have L of a knot with two double points, then I guess, again, it splits into two cases. If in the first double point the two components are different from each other, then when we resolve the first double point, we will get 1 in either case. We will get 1, and then here if we resolve it to a plus, we will, well, no matter how we resolve this one, we will get 1 over here. So we will get 1 minus 1, which is equal to 0, and L of I and I will be, well, 0 minus 0, which is also 0, and we're done. Yes?
Is this the only type 1 invariant in some appropriate sense?
Yes.
And so then are type N invariants uniquely classified by N?
No.
Okay.
There are many, many, many. So there is a unique type 0 invariant.
Yeah,
there is, well, later we will modify the definition of knots a bit, and then there will be another type 1 invariant. But with the current definition, there is not quite a unique, but if you have a link with n components, you have n choose 2 type 1 invariants, because you could take talk about the linking number of any two of the components. And then it goes wild after that. Okay? Yes?
So, I mean, this invariant only makes sense for links, right? Or is there a way to sort of take one knot and somehow think of L for one knot?
So if you think about Wednesdays, and on Wednesdays we started talking about self-linking. Self-linking will turn out to be a degree 1 invariant of single knots, but we haven't finished the discussion, so... But it's not quite knots, it's knots with additional information. So as it is right now, there are no degree one invariants of knots. However, there are degree two invariants of knots. Okay? So in fact, let's show the next example. So example. So here's a little bit of a confusion. We are talking about polynomial invariants of knots. A priori, this has nothing to do, like these are polynomial invariants of knots. The nth derivative vanishes, the n plus first derivative invariants. A priori, this has nothing to do with things like the Jones polynomial. The Jones polynomial is not a polynomial invariant of knots. It's an invariant of knots with values in polynomials. It's something completely different, right? This is a function on the space of knots that, as a function of the space of knots, should be considered as a polynomial. Maybe the function here is with values in real numbers and should be thought of as a polynomial. And this is a function on the space of knots with values in the space of polynomials. Nevertheless, there is a relationship. So the claim is that if we take J of a knot K, or in general a link, I mean K doesn't have to be a knot, and we evaluate it at Q equals, well, actually all I need is something whose Taylor series begins with 1 plus X. Okay? But the standard thing to choose is e to the X. Okay? So if you take the Jones polynomial and evaluate it at e to the x, and then Taylor expand the result. So the result will be a big sum of things multiplying x to the n. Let's call the coefficient of x to the n v sub n, and it's of course a function of the knot k. Okay? Now, V sub n in itself is a knot invariant. Because we took a knot invariant, then if it's an invariant, then every coefficient of it will be a knot invariant. So V sub n is an invariant, in fact, of oriented knot in oriented space, and in fact, it has values in the rational numbers the way we did it. So V sub n of k belongs to the rational numbers, well, because everything was over the integer, the Jones polynomial was always over the integers, and then we expanded it at e to the x, and e to the x is only rational coefficients. Okay? So, now the claim is that v sub n is of type n. Okay? So in particular, there are invariant of type n for many, many other n's other than 0 and 1. Okay? Second, invariants of finite type are at least as strong as the Jones polynomial. Because if you know all the coefficients of a function, you know the function. So, well, finite type invariants at least separate 243 of the first 250 knots. Okay? They do better, but we will get to it later. Okay. Anyway, proof. So, before the proof, I need a little bit of an aside about the Jones polynomial. So, aside, so basically I want to compare J of an overcrossing with J of an undercrossing. So, let me write a few formulas, okay? So, J of an overcrossing, By the way, the word overcrossing will be synonym to positive crossing, and undercrossing synonym to negative crossing, okay? So J of a positive crossing, by definition, is, well, you see, J was defined to be minus A cubed times the right. The contribution of a positive crossing to the right was simply the sum of the signs of the crossing, will be plus one, okay? So we will get here negative A cubed, I get the opposite sign. Can somebody look up what we did 2 days ago? Maybe it was plus WK?
Yes, it's plus.
Plus?
No, it's the same thing. Previously, we multiplied with A to the minus.
Yeah.
A to the minus.
Oh, sorry, but there is a Q. That A is Q to the minus one quarter, not Q to the quarter. Sorry, that's where the minus sign comes from. So basically, the contribution of the crossing to this piece is minus Q to the 3/4, and then I'm left with the inside, so the Kaufman bracket, and the Kaufman bracket becomes Q to the negative quarter times the bracket of this plus Q to the 1/4 times the bracket of that, and I think this whole quantity is to be divided by D. Okay, similarly, J of a negative crossing will be, so I just have to flip all the signs, negative Q to the negative 3/4, Q to the negative 1/4, sorry, but now instead of taking the zero smoothing, I have to take the zero smoothing of that. The zero smoothing of that is the one smoothing of that. So I'll get this plus Q to the 1/4 times the one smoothing, same thing. Okay? But then the moral is that so now what I will do is I can cancel this against that. So they come with different powers of Q in front. So I can multiply this by some power of Q and multiply that by some other power of Q so as to shift the powers of Q so that they will match, and then in the difference, these will cancel. And then the result is that J of, or in fact, well, I'm now writing the correct powers of Q. So Q inverse J of an overcrossing minus Q J of an undercrossing is equal to, okay, so now I have to collect what remains. So I took the right powers, I hope, so as to cancel these two, but what remains is this thing, okay? But this thing comes with two coefficients, and the two coefficients are one from here and one from here, and I believe after multiplying by Q inverse and Q, you get Q to the 1/2 minus Q to the negative 1/2. Well, and I don't get this, I get the bracket of this. divided by D, meaning the Jones of that. Okay, the contribution of this to the right is zero, so you don't get the contribution from this piece, you only get the Jones. Okay? So this is the so-called Jones-Skein relation. And in fact, this, along with J of the unknown, is equal to, what is J of the unknown? Well, I think we computed it. Anyway, it comes out to be 1. So this, along with that, determine the Jones polynomial. Why? Because, first of all, they determine J of a two-component unknown. Because you can look at J of a figure 8 thing, and then Q times this, or maybe Q inverse times this, I don't know. So something times this minus something else times its opposite is equal to something times J of its resolution. But the resolution of this is a knot with two components. So a knot with two components can be computed in terms of a knot with one component. Both of these are just the unknot. Okay, so you can compute. So the conclusion is that J of a knot with two component is known. Known, and so on. And then J of a knot with three components is a knot with three components is known, and so on. Okay. On the other hand, using this relation, you can always express J of an undercrossing in terms of J of an overcrossing and J of a knot with one crossing less. Okay? But you see, by flipping overcrossings to undercrossings, you can undo any knot. So you start with a complicated knot, you flip undercrossings to overcrossings until it's the unknot. The value of the unknot you know, and each of the prices you had to pay was a knot with one crossing less. So by induction, you can compute J of any knot. So this relation in itself determines the Jones polynomial. Okay? Anyway, that's not what I wanted to... that's an aside, yes?
Do I understand correctly that intermediate calculation, when we compute Jones polynomial, should we multiply by a cubed to the power w of everything else? Or no?
Yes, but I'm... Yes?
Okay, in with respect to those equalities.
Yes, yeah, so I'm kind of looking at the... In fact, okay, you are right. I should have not written bracket here. I should have written J. No, what should I have done?
You just multiply by a factor which is disappears later.
Yes, I should have added here. So, okay, really I should have added here divided by D, but also multiplied by minus A cubed to the power negative Rith prime, where Rith prime is the Rith of the rest of the knot. And it appears everywhere. So over here it's also negative A cubed. Sorry, it's in the numerator. So, negative a cubed to the power negative Rith prime and divided by d, and then this packs into j again. Yeah, you're right. I should have included this factor. Okay? maybe another comment before we go on. It's actually very easy to remember which of the two smoothings stays in this relation. So it's the oriented smoothing. You see, if you have an oriented knot, then one of the smoothings will agree with the orientation. The other smoothing will have you connect things in a way that you will not be able to orient the resulting knot. Okay? So the one, or the resulting knot projection. So the one you keep is the one, the oriented smoothing. Okay? So this is the so-called the oriented smoothing. Anyway, so now I can go back to the proof of the claim. Proof of claim. So I suppose I want to compute J on a knot that has a double point, and therefore deduce Vn on a knot with double points. Okay? So what is J of a knot with a double point? By definition, it's J of an overcrossing minus J of an undercrossing. And I suppose I already have a relation for J of an over, well, for the same thing with Q's and Q inverses. Okay? So let me write it this way. Maybe I should have well, maybe I should have spent another minute on the A side. So make another space for an A side over here. So I have that Q inverse J of what do I want to say? Sorry, this is arithmetic and I'm being stuck with arithmetic. So J of an overcrossing.
Can you just replace Q by e to the h and then combine the terms?
Yeah, but
scale relation.
Just a minute. What do I want to say? This is equal to well, you know what, I'll do it the hard way. So this is J of, the first term is J of, you know what, I'll use plus for the overcrossing because it's faster to write, and minus for the undercrossing. So it's J of plus Q inverse minus 1 J of plus minus, well, I've done nothing, right? Minus J of minus minus Q minus 1 J of minus. I think I've done nothing, right? Let's see. Yeah, I think I'm fine. Yeah. Wait.
Causes Q up here.
Yeah.
What?
So is that the second line? Is it the same as the first line?
Yeah, that's what it's supposed to be. Great. J of plus. Sorry. I want it to be Q inverse. Sorry, I want to pull out the Q inverse. So it's Q inverse, and here it's 1 minus Q inverse. Right, so the Q inverse cancels and I'm left with the 1. And over here, I want to pull out the Q, so I have to subtract 1 minus Q. Yeah, now it's right. Sorry. Okay? So, this is equal to... okay, but now I can pair these two. These two, by the Jones relation, are what is written over here. So Q to the 1 half minus Q to the minus 1 half times J of a smoothing. But I still have the 1 minus Q inverse J of a plus minus, or you know what, plus Q inverse Q minus 1 J of a minus.
Okay, sorry.
But remember that I'm going to switch Q to be e to the x, so let's expand it in powers of e to the x, sorry, in powers of x. So this is, what is it? The 1 cancels, right? This is 1 plus 1 half x plus x squared and so on. And this is 1 minus 1 half x. So here, the 1s will cancel. And I'll have x over 2 minus x over 2. So I'll have x over 2 plus triple dots times J of a smoothing plus, okay, expand this in powers of x, the 1 will also cancel, so you will get x plus triple dots J of plus, from here you will get x plus triple dots J of minus. So x plus more stuff times J of minus. Okay, sorry for taking so long. But this I could have done independently in each crossing. Okay, I could have, sorry, at each double point. If I had several double points, I could have done it separately in each one. Oops, I shouldn't have erased the statement. So the moral is that J of a knot with, say, n double points, well, you know what, let's make it n plus 1. You know what, sorry, I want to add one more line. Sorry, I'm confused today. The point here is that, sorry, here it's not even x over 2, it's x over 2, it's x. Sorry, it's x. Yeah. So the point here is that each of these coefficients is divisible by x. You can pull out one x and still get a power series. So this is equal to x times a coefficient a times j of a bridge, a smoothing, plus b times a coefficient, plus j of a positive, plus c times j of a negative. So when we have n plus 1 double points, we will get n plus 1 x's. Each double point will contribute an x. So we will get x to the n plus 1 times and here it's something which is a bit messy to write, but it amounts to each double point is replaced, well, by a sum of three terms. So overall, this corresponds to 3 to the n plus 1 terms. Okay? So each double point is replaced by, you know, something A times this plus B times plus whatever. Okay? But in fact, it doesn't matter what sits here. The point is that it starts with n x to the n plus 1. So the coefficient of x to the n in j of a knot with n plus 1 double points is equal to 0. But you see, this coefficient is what we called Vn. So Vn of a knot with n double points, n plus 1 double points, is equal to 0, and we've proven the theorem. Sorry for making it appear so painful. And I think we will continue next Wednesday.